get back a respected justice system? A good thing from fiducia supplicans? In this 50th episode of Church and State, Brian McCall and Christopher Ferrara discuss TRS, what Ferrara coins as Trump Rearrangement Syndrome, and how the ecumeniac movement, a post-Vatican II novelty also known as ecumenism, carries within itself the seeds of its own destruction. This is evidenced by the response of the schismatic Catholic Coptics to the Vatican's latest abandonment of Catholic tradition and their opposition to the clear teaching of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Welcome to another edition of Church and State with Chris Ferrara and Brian McCall, where we continue to document the ever-imploding nonsense in Church and State. How you been, Chris?
All right. It's a real clown car full of developments.
Yeah, that it is.
It gets crazier by the day.
Well, at center ring in the state is Georgia, Fulton County, Georgia, which... you say, hey, wait a minute, maybe people should have had IDs, maybe there's something going on with this election, and you get brought up on racketeering charges. So what's the latest out of that nonsense?
Well, the judge split the baby in Solomonic fashion, as some have observed. So he said that basically Fani's lover boy must be fired after receiving almost $700,000 in taxpayer dollars for doing nothing and with no experience in RICO. No problem, keep the money. Just fire the boyfriend.
But wait, how do I get this gig? This is a good deal. I get paid and don't work?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
He sits there like a jamoke, as we used to say in New York City. Does nothing because he's not qualified. He's basically a moron. And so is she, as Mike Davis said, they're morons, and they are. So anyway, if she fires the lover boy who receives $700,000 in tax dollars, from his illicit paramour, that's okay. She can stay on the case. But if she doesn't fire Loverboy, she has to recuse herself. And that means recusing her whole office, which means a whole different prosecutor would have to look at this ridiculous RICO case. And, of course, it would end up being dismissed. And, you know, as a sop to the defense, yesterday or the day before, he dismissed six counts, charging Trump with suborning violation of oath by public officials to commit a felony in violation of their oath. The only problem is they don't specify what felony Trump was soliciting them to commit. They just basically say he was asking them to violate their oaths. How? The judge said. Well, there's no basis for it, so he dismissed six charges. There's something like 25 left. The whole case is absurd. Mm-hmm. A RICO case based on phone calls and conferences and First Amendment protected speech. So that's the development there. And now anyone who watched the testimony, even people on CNN, said they stank up the courtroom. Fani Willis, her boyfriend, and the boyfriend's former law partner, they obviously got together and cooked up a story about how there was no relationship before she hired her lover boy, but there was a relationship. We have the cell tower data with 2,000 phone calls in a period of 1 year, 12,000 text messages. The cell phone pinging showed that he was at her condo in the middle of the night. Judge didn't let any of that evidence in. He made his ruling while avoiding that evidence. So I think what's going to happen is they'll appeal it. I believe in Georgia they can take an interlocutory appeal, meaning an appeal in the middle of the case before the trial on the issue of the disqualification. It's absolutely outrageous. She lied through her teeth. Everyone knows it. But as Dershowitz, who calls himself the Nostradamus of legal predictions, rightly predicted, this judge would not have the courage to remove her for blatant perjury as well as the obvious conflict of interest. So that's where we stand with that case.
Yeah, can you trust a prosecutor who literally, perjured herself clearly on the stand? I mean, the best part of that was, I paid him back for all those trips and tens of thousands of dollars in cash.
Oh, yeah.
That I just had lying around my house.
Yeah, it's a black thing. Right. My daddy, the former Black Panther, said, always keep 6 months in cash in your house. The only problem is she didn't have 6 months worth of cash in her house. She was under debt, and it was a tax lien or some other kind of lien against her. And she had to borrow money to run for DA. The woman embarrassed herself. She embarrassed the whole prosecutor's office. She made a spectacle of herself and showed just why these mediocrities should not be hired in the first place. It was a joke. And all the judge could say was he doesn't condone her unprofessional testimony on the witness stand. She lied. What do you mean unprofessional? It was a criminal conspiracy to commit perjury between her and her boyfriend.
I mean, that's like Biden this week. He called, the person that murdered the young girl an illegal. And then, I'm sorry. I don't mean illegal. Undocumented.
You can't make it up.
I mean,
Babylon Bee is really having a hard time because that would have been a Babylon Bee headline.
Exactly.
Biden apologizes for calling a murderer an illegal alien.
Right.
That would have been a Babylon Bee headline. It's the truth. That's what's happening.
Right. Exactly.
Good job over there.
Yeah, it's really hard coming up with things that don't actually happen.
Someone said long ago, this was like 20 years ago, we live in an age in which parody is impossible because the absurdities we see are incapable of enlargement.
Right, that's very true. Well, the good thing, although this judge clearly did not have the moral courage to do the right thing, is I think this case is over before the election now. I mean, they've just spun their wheels with this nonsense testimony. I mean, how do they ever get a trial now and a verdict before November? Well, I mean, what do you think?
I don't think so, especially if there's an interlocutory appeal of the judge's refusal to remove her from the case. Mm-hmm. I mean, the other thing is she used secret grand jury materials for a book on the whole case called Find Me the Votes, which is not what Trump ever said. So even the title of her book is false.
Right.
And so she is basically profiting from the leak of secret grand jury materials with a book whose title is false, and she's putting Trump on trial for making false statements, none of which are actually false.
But, I mean, if you're a prosecutor, can you write a book about a case you're in the middle of and make money from it?
Oh, no problem. This is Trump.
Right. Well, it is true. I mean, people used to talk about Trump derangement syndrome, and I thought, okay, you're exaggerating. But it is true. It's almost like with this guy, people that are maybe otherwise rational people just sort of lose their mind. They just sort of go completely crazy.
Well, that's Trump derangement syndrome, TDS. I would propose a new variant now. TRS, Trump rearrangement syndrome. The law is rearranged for Trump. They come up with new crimes that no one has ever been charged with, as Judge Cannon noted, by the way, at the hearing yesterday in Florida on the so-called classified documents case. Mm. She asked the attorney for the special prosecutor, gee, has a president or vice president in the history of the United States ever been charged for wrongfully retaining classified documents? No. So as with all the other cases against Trump, they've made up a crime to fit Trump, Trump rearrangement syndrome.
Well, it's funny. There's an interesting novel I read years ago. It's sort of a dystopian future novel where the world is run by lawyers. Lawyers are in charge of everything. So it's a good lawyer book. But what's funny about it, or one of the aspects of it, is the judges wear these visors over their eyes while they're trying the case. And then the lawyers who control it, they sit in the back. And as the trial's not going well, they rewrite the law and they like inform the judge. So the judge will make a ruling. So-and-so, that's it. Oh, wait. Nope. Sorry. The law's just changed. Now it's the other side.
That's like what we already have.
And I said, look, it's like this guy's 10-year-old book about a dystopian future is what's going on right now. It's amazing. Fiction is becoming nonfiction.
Wow. I can't imagine that even with the rearranged judicial system, Trump ultimately will not prevail, at least at the appellate level. So especially in the RICO case in Georgia, which is not a RICO case. It's a fake RICO case. I don't think the Georgia Supreme Court is going to tolerate convicting a former president of the United States for making phone calls about an election. It's a joke. A joke.
Or the other case, for making a speech.
Oh, yes. Well, he made a speech on January 6th. And then while he was making the speech, people who weren't even listening to the speech supposedly attacked democracy.
Right.
While Trump was telling the people who were listening to his speech to be peaceful.
Well, yeah, because they were inspired by a speech they weren't listening to, because that's
right.
How things work.
It was in the air. It's a new feeling.
Right.
Atmospheric incitement.
I mean, with all sort of joking aside, seriously, how do we get back a justice system that people can respect? I mean, once you sort of cross these lines and go from the ridiculous to the absurd, how do you reestablish respect for a court system that's allowing this to go on?
Very good question. I'm not sure it can ever be done at this point. But you know what? If you're doubting about whether you should vote for Trump, if you don't like his mean tweets or his personality or the nasty things he says about people who are trying to destroy him, think about how they have done everything humanly possible in the United States, and all the powers of the world have combined with them to stop this one man from getting elected. Now, that doesn't tell you that you should be voting for him. I don't know what would. When everyone is aligned against one guy, when they're inventing crimes that don't exist to try to put him in a jail cell so that, Satan forbid, there's an election and Trump gets elected. Mm. That should tell you that's the guy we want to vote for. Mm. The enemy of my enemy is my friend, even if you think Trump is your enemy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's – because every now and again when I think, has Trump been compromised? Is he – can we – I go, no, there's no way. There's no way. This is too elaborate of an undercover operation to persecute this guy this much to sort of, you know, outthink us. Whatever his flaws are – the deep state does not like him. I mean, it's pretty – that we can say for sure.
Well, he's the only outsider. I've been following politics for all my life, since I was a teenager. Yeah. He's the only true outsider that ever managed to get elected president, who wasn't an Ivy Leaguer, who wasn't in Skull and Bones, wasn't bought and paid for by lobbyists or corporations. He really was an outsider. He had built his own real estate empire. He owed nothing to anybody in the establishment. And from the moment he came down the escalator, as he himself continually points out, they began investigating him. Who is this guy? It's like the establishment has an immune system, and Trump was the invading organism. They had to expel him because he was a threat to their body of corruption, their corporate institutionalized globalist corruption. That's what this is all about. I mean, they're terrified of what happens if he gets elected again. I don't think they're going to let him take power. They're going to find some way, even if he wins, to stop him from occupying the office. At least they'll make a serious effort at it.
Well, because to save democracy, you have to prevent democracy. That's that's their way of thinking.
Yeah. Well, of course, that's what liberals always do. They what they're doing is exactly the opposite of what they say, which, of course, we've seen in the church, too.
Speaking of which, we have that virus in the church that you talked about in the Great Facade of ecumenism, which again did not begin with Pope Francis. I mean, he has taken it to sort of new places, but you know, goes back to the Council, Paul VI,
right,
John Paul II, flying around, making pals with schismatics and sects and non-Christian religions, praying with them at Assisi. But the problem with ecumenism is if you try to make friends with everyone, you end up really making friends with nobody. You offend somebody, you know, like just for example, the Cardinal Dolan, that embarrassment of the Cardinal from New York, was going around celebrating Ramadan. And well, then, you know, some Jewish groups were all upset about that he, you know, in the midst of this war where they've been attacked, you know, he's celebrating Ramadan. Why a cardinal celebrating Ramadan is beyond me, but still, it's the same point. Any group you lavish attention on in this false ecumenism, you're going to annoy someone.
Well, so Dolan can make up for that by consuming an entire kosher pizza.
Exactly, right. Or going to a kosher deli and getting a pastrami sandwich or so. Yeah, that'll make up for it. But we saw another example of this. The first good thing that has come out of fiducia supplicans, that horrible document from the kissing cardinal and Pope Francis, that you can bless a couple, but not the couple, but the couple that are living in sin. The first actual positive development has come from that. The Coptic Orthodox Church, which are schismatic and heretical Christians, said they're not engaging in ecumenical dialogue anymore with the Vatican. They're bringing it to an end. So first positive outcome. But again, the Vatican was kind of caught off guard when they announced this. They said, we're done. Like, you've lost the plot. There's nothing to talk to people about that would do this, that you have now. And then the Vatican tried to say, oh, it has nothing to do with fiducia supplicans. So they kind of doubled down, the patriarch, and said, yeah, you changed the whole church's teaching on homosexuality, and we can't have anything to do with you. This is ecumenism come home to roost. What would you
Well, as we've said in episode after episode, the crisis in the church is reaching its terminal phase with this ridiculous pope, who, by the way, just said, and I'm quoting, "It is right," referring to these so-called gay couples, "it is right that these people who live the gift of love can have legal coverage like everyone else." It's a quote from his upcoming book. So the Catholics have said, enough of this guy. This is not even Christian, let alone Catholic. It certainly isn't the Coptic Orthodox religion, which shows that ecumenism, we talked about how the slogans of liberals signify the opposite of what's actually going on. Ecumenism was supposed to be a movement for Christian unity. It's actually promoted Christian disunity. The only people who are unified with the church now are those who have totally apostatized from anything resembling Christianity, the Anglicans with their women and homosexual priests and so forth. And this is what Pius XI warned about ecumenism, that if you embrace this movement, which began with Protestants in the 1920s, you will end up by altogether abandoning the revealed religion. Hmm. And the revealed religion is, of course, Catholicism. That's what the New Testament is. The revelation of Christ, which includes his foundation of the church, the one and only true church, which, as St. Paul said, he purchased with his blood. Mm-hmm. So ecumenism is all about throwing down that claim. They have uncrowned him, as Archbishop Lefebvre said, meaning Christ the King. So ecumenism, which really has no meaning, I do point this out in the Great Facade, it's a neologism with no clear meaning. What the heck is ecumenism? How does one engage in ecumenism? What is the end state of ecumenism? No one ever tells us. It's an ism, like other isms, that is devoid of meaning, but causes all kinds of problems. And now the problem here is total dissolution of Catholicism. Mm. For these people, anyway.
And again, it's sort of this bizarre scenario where a group that have broken with the church typically say, well, I'm distinct from you because I'm rejecting Catholic doctrine. So they're rejecting the supremacy of the papacy or the filioque. So they're taking something Catholic, saying, I will go away from it, are now actually saying, I want nothing to do with you because you're rejecting Catholic doctrine. I mean, it's sort of turned on its head what's going on here.
This might be a bizarre observation, but I think that if Martin Luther were alive today, he might well be attending a Pius X chapel. That's how insane things are.
Yeah.
I think he'd be as much of a reactionary against what's going on, at least in some points, as we supposedly are. The term reactionary has been given a pejorative connotation, but we're rightly reacting against the auto-demolition of the church. Luther would be horrified by this pope. Of course, this would only confirm the Protestant caricature of the pope as Antichrist. Mm. But they don't understand that the papacy is also a human institution. The occupant of the chair of Peter is not immune from error. He teaches infallibly only if he teaches what the church has always and everywhere taught and what has always and everywhere been believed by Christians, to allude to the famous formula of St. Vincent Lerenz. Mm. And so when the pope departs from that deposit of the faith, as we call it, he falls into error. Very few popes have done that in history. He's done it, this pope, in a way and to an extent never before seen in 2,000 years.
Well, but again, it's with all modernism, even though that's true, they're just so hard to pin down because they want to have their sin and eat it too. Everything they say is contradictory. So I'm not changing Catholic doctrine on the sinfulness of this, but it's an act of love. Or I'm blessing the couple, but not blessing their union. You know, I'm doing something and I'm not doing it at the same time with such a confused mind. And that's the problem. Like if you actually have a trial of heresy, if you've got a mind that's so confused that thinks that, you know, something can be a circle and a triangle at the same time, what do they really believe if they have such a disjointed mind?
Well, the modernist believes that there's nothing wrong with these so-called homosexual unions, and he conceals that belief with ambiguity. So this is what the modernist does. Pius X pointed this out, that if you read their literature, you'll see something very orthodox, and then you turn the page two or three pages later, there's an absolute heresy. So they bob and they weave, but when they bob and weave, they always move in the same direction, which is away from orthodoxy. And that's what this pope does. Every once in a while, he'll say something orthodox to throw you off the trail. Someone said this about John Locke. He leaves one trail for the pious and another for the people in the know to show them where he's really going. And that's the modus operandi of the modernists. You throw down some breadcrumbs to satisfy the faithful, the Orthodox faithful, but the obvious overall direction should be clear to anybody who really understands how a modernist works. And that's this Pope in a nutshell. He's a modernist.
And again, it's really the same modus operandi of the less radical liberals of the revolution of the 18th, 19th century, you know, who were seen as conservatives, but really were just going along the same direction as the liberals, just doing it a little bit more slowly. They're on the same trajectory, but, you know, we just want to take it easy as opposed to rushing straight headlong into the abyss.
Well, there's a parallel here between the revolution and Russia, too. You had the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks. The Bolsheviks wanted to level social order and install an entirely new conception of society. And the Mensheviks said, not so fast, not so fast. Slow it down a little bit. And that's what we see in the church. You have the Mensheviks and the Bolsheviks, and then you have the so-called conservative Catholics who try to explain away everything that's happening, although I think that enterprise is pretty much shut down now.
Well, there's still a few hangers-on.
Desperate hangers-on.
Yes, yes. But there's really not much more explaining you can do. So, you know, there we have it, a lot of contradictions in church and state. And really it all comes down to what Pope Pius X talks about in his encyclical on modernism, the sort of philosophy of reality, right? The only way you can be led into these errors, as you've seen in both these stories, is if you just deny reality. So Trump hasn't committed a crime, but I just can't deal with that reality. So I speak, therefore it is. I just say it's a crime. There's really no agreement on doctrine among these groups. You just declare ecumenical dialogue and we agree, but we don't. So it's really just a disconnect, being disconnected from reality.
Yeah, well, it's a form of nominalism and positivism mixed together. You label something good and it is good. And you do things that are contrary to tradition, but because you exercise authority, well, your will is law. So let it be written, so let it be done. And that's the problem with this tyrannical papacy. But as we conclude this segment, we can wait to see what will happen in the next 2 weeks. I'm sure something even more absurd will develop.
Exactly. Well, in those next 2 weeks, certainly we will be going into the most important week of the year, to Holy Week, the week that changed history forever, and begin the celebration of our Lord's resurrection. So I hope everybody watching the show has a very holy and fruitful Holy Week and is able to, notwithstanding the chaos out there in the church and world, repose in the peace of the resurrection.
Yes, and consider also our own eternal destiny so that we don't get overwhelmed by current events.
Absolutely. Sage advice. Well, have a great Easter, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Until next time. God bless.
This episode of Church and State is brought to you by the Fatima Center. Copyright 2024. All rights reserved. For more resources, and to support this vital apostolate with your donation, visit our website, fatima.org, or call us at 1-800-263-8160. And please join us in offering Our Lady a spiritual bouquet of 100,000 First Saturdays for the 100th anniversary of Our Lady's request of this devotion. Sign up for this First Saturday Challenge, 100 by 100. Update your status and track our progress around the world at fatima.org, 100 by 100. Along with the consecration of Russia, the First Saturday devotion is one of the two principal means by which God wills to establish in the world devotion to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. For peace in the world and in the church, and more importantly, for the conversion and salvation of many souls, it is essential that every Catholic live the Fatima message. Our Lady of the Rosary, pray for us. Long live Christ the King.